Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Hey everybody, it's Owen again. I got a chance to talk last week with Cal Poly Mustangs women's basketball coach, Faith Mimna. Coach Faith is going into her 16th season with Cal Poly and should win her 200th game this season. I think she needs 5 wins in the 2012-13 campaign to get to 200 for her career. We talked about her offseason, recruiting. There are some freshmen that are coming in that she was speaking pretty highly of. We talked about the last couple of seasons. Cal Poly's had the last 3 Big West Players of the Year and have won the last 2 regular season championships. We also discussed what it's going to take to break through at the Big West tournament and what it's going to take to hopefully win that at some point. Hope you enjoy the conversation with Faith Mimna here on the Fansmanship.com podcast. I'm here on the Fansmanship.com podcast with Faith Mimna. Did you just finish your 15th season, or are you going into your 15th season here at Cal Poly? Your 15th, going into the 16th season here at Cal Poly. I think, and I could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, the winningest coach kind of in the program's history as far as the number of wins. Is that?
I think it's because I've been here for 15 years I got that nice
title
to my name, yes.
Almost 200 games as the Cal Poly head coach, won, over 400 coached. In 15 years, yeah, it's kind of you'll hopefully get your 200th win this year. I think the number stands at 195 as of the end of last year. Cal Poly, each of the last 2 years has been the Big West regular season champ in women's basketball, and the past 3 years they've had the Big West Player of the Year come from Cal Poly in Christina Santiago and.
Rachel
Clancy in between the 2 Santiago years. What's the offseason been like for you and your staff this year? What have you guys been up to? What does a typical offseason look like for you guys?
Well, in the spring, we didn't really give them too much time off. We went to the Final Four and then got started straight away in weight training and working with the players. We're allowed to work with them up to 2 hours a week at that stage, and we optimized that opportunity. They also were just trying to stay in touch with some cardiovascular ability. We didn't kill them, but they ran a mile on a weekly basis for time. And several players really surprised us with their times. We have most of the team that was within the parameters that we established and have been able to maintain that strong conditioning all the way through the summer. And hopefully we just swing right on through this preseason and not have to reestablish conditioning levels that they've just been able to maintain throughout the whole summer.
That's something goal. that they've kind of done on their own then. You might be able to give them like, hey, here's a good way to work out on your own, but here's, you know, you got to do that on your own because you guys aren't allowed to have them or to have a lot of contact with them.
Right. That's a little bit different than what the men's team experienced this summer. This was their first year working with the athletes, and we're still prohibited from working with them during the summer. Our strength training coach can work with them. So they try to take advantage of doing the weight training. But we pretty much take them right up until the last week in May as far as working with them in the weight room, on the court with conditioning, but also agility and speed. So they've had a good spring, I think, of trying to help us improve physically to be in a really demanding conference in the Big West. And hopefully, you know, we're going to be well prepared. We did have a couple of setbacks this summer. Molly Schlemer ended up contracting mononucleosis. So all the hard work that she put into the spring kind of sidelined her for the last month.
Because conditioning is not something that can kind of hang on when you have mono. Yeah, absolutely.
No, you go back to level 0.
Yeah, square 1. Absolutely.
So she's a bit bummed about that, but hopefully we'll make some progress there quickly.
Great. What's the deal with the rule being different? What's the between how much you're able to see your players and how much contact you're able to have with them? Is that something that's going to change eventually, you think?
I think that it will. We just had a vote on that to propose to the NCAA.
Like a coaches association kind of?
Yeah, each coaches association kind of puts it forward as far as what they want their rules to be. And men's basketball, from my understanding, is that so much of the NBA was really moving towards international recruiting because the coaches internationally could work with the players year-round, and we weren't afforded that same luxury here in the United States. So I think that's how the men were able to get that rule changed through. Now, obviously, there's other sports that are able to do summertime. Tennis is one, swimming is one, and they've pretty much been able to do the coaching in the summertime because of safety reasons, at least for swimming. I don't think so much for tennis.
Right.
But it would be an interesting situation for women's basketball to move into that area. And I'm not sure how Coach Calero felt about it, but certainly there's a huge advantage, or would be an advantage, in my opinion, for the incoming players to receive some instruction. Because in the quarter system, we are so far behind our opponents in that department. Because when they start in August at the semester system, they virtually have a full month to work with their incoming athletes. A lot of times our incoming athletes don't receive that kind of advantage, and so they're maybe not able to contribute as quickly at the quarter schools as they would be at the semester schools. We get the makeup of on the backside of it, but oftentimes it doesn't really.
But that's kind of after
itself.
The season's over, right?
It doesn't show itself during the season. So,
right. Being a fall sport.
This would give us a real, the freshmen anyway, I think, a real heads up and head start on trying to get a few more things under their belt before a season begins.
Sure. So the contact time that you do get with your team is there's like a blackout period then for most of the summer. Is that kind of how that works?
Yeah, we can't do anything. We can't even observe them
right.
In the weight room or on the court. It seems a bit silly in my opinion
because they're doing it anyway.
They're doing it and they really would like the help, but you know, we're
right.
not allowed. So.
Right. The past two seasons, your team's kind of been, I guess, for lack of a better term, kind of flush with leaders, I feel like, with Rachel and Christina and even other seniors that have come through. Who should fans be looking for this year kind of to fill those shoes, or who are you looking to leadership-wise to fill those shoes on your team?
We have some tremendous leaders on our team. I don't know that anyone will emerge as a scoring leader per se, as you saw with Rachel and Christina. It might be more of a collective team effort, and you might see several players that are, you know, 12 points a game. But the leadership that we have on our team right now is very positive. They're driven. I fully expect for Kayla Griffin many people don't know that she played pretty much the whole season last year with a stress fracture in her foot and is still suffering from that. So she's in a boot right now, and we're hoping that she'll be ready to go for the season. But
is that kind of a thing? Obviously, she was able to play through it. Is that something that kind of it's just you have to rest or not? There's not really anything you can do for
Yeah, there wasn't
like
a lot
that?
We could do. And at first it didn't show up on the x-ray, so we didn't know that it was a stress fracture. But then it did show up on a bone scan this summer. So, you know, she is such a trooper, and she's going to put it all out there. But I feel like her leadership ability, or ability to really set the tone for us, is remarkable. And I look for her to do great things for us. Somebody who we haven't seen from in the previous three seasons is Nicole Allison. And Nicole's dealt with so many injuries during her time here at Cal Poly. But she is a tremendous leader. She is, I think, somebody who could be a real significant scorer for us. If she can stay healthy, I see her as somebody who would emerge as a potential leader in the scoring department for us. And then certainly we've added some other players to our program that I think are going to be significant contributors as well. But speaking to the leadership potential on this team, I think that Nicole, Brittany, Kayla, Ashley Cassio have really kind of emerged as those team leaders, and you would expect that from your seniors.
Right, yeah, and I was going to ask you about Kayla especially, being that she probably got the most time on the court the last couple of years out of all those. Last season, the up-tempo style was kind of a hallmark of the team. You had a pretty deep team, I think. As somebody who's a former kind of point, you're a former point guard, right? As somebody who played guard when you were playing, is coaching an up-tempo game kind of more fun, or does it sometimes maybe become more difficult when the up-tempo style maybe, you know, yeah, when you have an up-tempo style, you have to deal with additional turnovers, kind of the crazy tempo of the game. Is it easier for you or more fun, or does it kind of make you more crazy?
I don't know how to play any other way than fast, and that's specifically a talent that I look for in all the players I recruit. Sometimes I've gone for big players that maybe couldn't move, and I've learned my lessons that I coach better when we're moving fast. It's because I don't have to coach as much, to be honest. It's because the players are learning how to make quick decisions, and they're not logging through, especially when I'm recruiting really tiny guards. They don't do as well in a half-court setting where people are just physically bigger than them. So we try to use their speed and their ability to pass the basketball to our advantage as a team. And who doesn't love to run? It's so much fun to watch. It's so much fun to play. And obviously, when you play at a breakneck pace, more people get to play. So that's where you get the depth.
Is Jonay Irvin kind of the prototype of that as far as being able to run and make quick decisions?
She is. And I have this beautiful plaque in my office. It says National Collegiate Athletic Association Division I Statistical Champion Jonay Irvin. 2.7 assists to 1 turnover. That's remarkable. She is the best in the whole country. And so proud of her and her achievement. And she has such great speed. We're hoping that she'll get back for the preseason games.
So what's the status? What her injury, for people who don't know?
Yeah, for people that don't know, she did tear her ACL. She tore her ACL her freshman year, but it was on the other knee. So she's just trying to balance it out, you know. But she...
I can picture her having at least one big brace on. Now she's probably going to be...
Yeah, I don't know if she'll... She'll probably have the one brace on the other knee, but she's a trooper, and doggone, if you're going to get a wheel broken, you wouldn't know it with her because she's so speedy. You know, if I broke my wheel, you would definitely notice that I would be a different pace, but she just keeps going and going and going, and what great speed she has, and she has a real heart to try to get to the next level and have basketball be a part of a professional career for her. So she's got some great goals ahead and is really determined to get back on the court for us.
How important is it to have that point guard that you can, that can kind of be an extension of your kind of wanting to keep the pace up and wanting to do that in the game?
It's critical. It's like any team that has a quarterback. If you've got a quarterback that can't throw or can't run, then you're pretty limited in what you can do. And it's the same for us. If we don't have somebody on the court that can run the show and direct everything, then we're going to have some trouble.
Watching the Olympics this year and the women's basketball there, did you watch? I mean, you probably watched it, yeah?
I only got to watch one game, the championship game.
Okay.
I was really annoyed by that.
Yeah.
But
So one thing that I was kind of not surprised by, but that was interesting to me was watching the women's team in 2000, 2004, and 2008. It seems like at the top level, at least, the speed is getting. I mean, you talk about the speed of the game. It's the gap is kind of closing there as far, people sometimes talk about the women's game being kind of a slower pace, and I feel like when you watch the highest levels, that gap is starting to close. At least the women's game is speeding up quite a bit. Is that something that trickles down to the higher levels of NCAA play, and then the kind of mid-major conferences as well, like the Big West, do you feel like, as far as the speed in general kind of increasing over the last 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I think the very top level of players have the ability to play at a high level, and whether they're playing with guys or they're playing with other elite women athletes, the pace, the physicality, everything has been changing and evolving over the last 20, 30 years. It's exciting.
I see these like 6'8" women that are, running the floor, and you watch, some other countries and you see kind of maybe going a time machine to what the U.S. might have been, 20 years ago or something like that. If somebody's 6'8", they're not getting up and down the floor. I mean, these ladies are running and dunking, doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that Brittany Griner has changed the game for where we're headed. In the past, when Ann Myers was playing and Ann Donovan was her teammate, mm-hmm. He had another 6'8" that was a tremendous presence. And then he had the Soviet player that was 7'2". She was a tremendous presence. You had a Chinese player that's 7'2". But neither of those players could move.
Right.
Ann Donovan could move, but, you don't want her to move. You want her to go up and down, for sure. But
stepping
you don't necessarily want her to step
out.
And this is where I think Brittany Griner is so athletic, her ability to finish with either hand, to dunk, to go through triple teams, and that's not unusual. All the centers have had to do that.
Sure.
But when you're talking about Deladonna from Connecticut, right. Here's a 6'5 player that can put the ball on the floor, shoot the three, and she's very similar to Lauren Jackson from Australia, who I think changed the game for the center and forward positions, much like...
She's the left-hander? Plays in Seattle?
She plays for Seattle. Yeah. She is right-handed.
Right-handed, okay,
but
sorry.
Doggone, she just changed things.
Right.
You know, she moved the center away from the basket. And so when she did that, then she forced Lisa Leslie to move away from the basket. Uh-huh. And everybody started, it bugs us college coaches, you know, because we're like, big girl, get your butt inside, you know. They're all wanting to be point guards. But just to have the ability to have all these great skills,
right.
You're seeing that on an international level. And you're certainly seeing it in, I thought, the men's representative team of the Olympics this year for the USA. They can just do so many things.
They barely had a center.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got LeBron James that can post up or play the point guard. He can do just everything, and it's so much fun to watch.
Even Kevin Love is shooting it from outside. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The game is changing. That's for sure. How'd you get into coaching? Initially, you've been here for 15 years.
Yeah. Well, I started by playing basketball, mm-hmm. and I had an older brother, 3 years older than me, Tim, and he was he's 6'3".
Okay.
I don't know what happened. I know people wonder. Every time I go to speak anywhere, they always say, oh, well, we expect you to be a little bit taller.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'2".
Okay.
Yeah. So he stole every single inch from me, and I'll blame him till the day I die. But I was his little sidekick, and any sport that he did, I would try to follow right behind him and do whatever. And
sure.
He played basketball, and I just fell in love with it. He taught me everything that he knew, and I just soaked it up and tried to do whatever he was doing. And back in the day, they didn't have a girls' team, so I played on the boys' team. And
you grew up where?
I grew up in Elk Grove,
okay.
Which is right outside Chicago.
Oh, Illinois.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right there by O'Hare Airport.
Uh-huh.
And had a chance to play basketball. And then when I got to high school, they had a girls' team, and was really honored to play for a terrific team. All my 4 years, we won the state championship my last year. And then went on to play at Loyola University, the first female scholarship, full scholarship athlete. There were some other scholarships that like split between volleyball, basketball, and I was the first women's basketball full scholarship athlete. So
At Loyola. Great.
And so I've been a little bit of a time machine here, but it's been something that's been a lot of fun. I got a chance to play professionally in Australia. And really, I had an opportunity in high school to coach the team that I was playing on during the summer league. And one of the coaches, or one of the teachers actually in high school, recognized my talent and asked me to actually teach the basketball unit. So I taught and graded the students that were my age. So it started in high school, I guess. And then when I went to play overseas, the coach didn't show up one day. He was also a football coach, rugby.
Okay.
The proper football,
uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't show up, so they asked me to run the training session, and boom, 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 I was running the show, and they asked me back to be a player coach after that. So it just kind of fell on me. I had no real desire to do it, to be honest, because I thought it was such a hard job, especially to keep everyone happy. And I recognize how important the players that don't always get to play in games are to a team.
Mm-hmm.
And I always just felt really badly for the players that were, you know, 13th, 14th on the team. And I thought, well, that would be so hard to watch them practice every day and not let them play in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, no, coaching wouldn't be for me. But
somehow you're
chose
here.
Me.
Yeah. I it's interesting you said to keep everybody happy. I have heard Eric Musselman, who's the LA Lakers D-League team coach, I think they're the Defenders or something like that, former Warriors coach, he said that, you know, coaching high school was the same as, you know, he said it was the same as coaching the NBA. Instead of agents, you deal with parents. Instead of, instead of somebody's wife, you're dealing with their girlfriend. And it was, I always thought it was kind of an interesting perspective from somebody who was at the top level, mm-hmm. of coaching in the NBA, to talk about kind of the similar things that you have to go through as a coach.
Yeah, there's a lot of transference. I can see that. And it would be wonderful if you just coach the players, but you do end up having to deal with other entities and relationships.
That's not always a bad thing.
it's not always bad because we've had some great parents, but we also, I understand that a parent can't see anything but their own child, and they've been blessed with that. But my job is to be able to see the talents of all the all of their children.
Great. As a head coach, you're kind of the, if you look at the org chart for the program, you're at the top of it, you know, for your program anyway. How would you talk about yourself as kind of a manager? What kind of a manager are you with your assistant coaches? How much delegation do you have to do? And has that changed over the years as far as how you manage your program?
Yeah, well, I think I've been very successful because I have great people around me. And when I give them a job, I give them the responsibility of that job. And so the delegation with the responsibility, I think, has been key for our success. I don't ever want to be a micromanager. In fact, most of the time my ideas are so, they just pale in comparison to the creativity of my great assistant coaches. So I never want to limit them by telling them how to do the job. I want to, if they need some structure and need a direction, I can help with that. But for the most part, they have such great ideas that I don't want to limit them with my limited knowledge. So when they get a job, they go for it and they do it exceptionally well. And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to work with such talented coaches. It's definitely not a hierarchy. It's a democracy. And I understand that I'm going to get the blame, and I accept that blame because I know I have to accept the credit too, but I want to distribute that credit as much as I can because they really do a marvelous job and they keep me sane and are very supportive of the things I do. And if I make a mistake, you know, they're not going to hold that over me forever. We just all move on and we keep moving. So
are you the kind of coach that like delegates like defense to one assistant and kind of more offense to another, or do you kind of delegate more explicitly and specifically to your
I've done different things over the course of my career. What we're doing right now is I'm kind of handling offense and defense, although there are specific things that I'm looking for. Each coach has a position that they're coaching. So Kristen is coaching the point guards, and Carrie Nakamoto is coaching the shooting guards, and Carrie Duperon is coaching the post players' swings, which, my opinion, the swings, we've been better than our opponents in that area with the swing players, because we get those really fun players that are tweeners. They're not really posts, they're not really guards, and they can play a lot of different places.
Do you feel like that's where Kayla falls in?
I do.
Yeah.
She played point guard in high school, and she just can do everything. We can post her up, she can shoot the three. She played point, so she makes great decisions. She rarely turns the ball over, and she's a great teammate. You know, she makes some super decisions. As far as other things go, Carrie Nakamoto the last 2 years has been doing all of the out-of-bounds plays, and she does a terrific job with that. In the past, we've had Julie Shaw, who instituted zone defense, because I don't feel like that's a strength of mine. Mm-hmm. And last year, Carrie Duperon handled some of the zone. So I try to keep giving them different things that they can hang their hat on and really get great at, so that they'll have something in their arsenal when they become a head coach.
You said you got to go to the Final Four. How was that? And is that something that you guys kind of look forward to most years, to be able to go and be there for the Final Four at the end of the year?
I don't really care about the games, so I don't pay the money to watch the games. But I do love learning, and so it's a learning lab all the time.
So it's like a conference
it
for
is
coaches
a,
during
a,
the Final Four.
Right, it's the Women's Basketball Coaches Association conference, and they'll have on-court things going on that you can learn from. They'll have different seminars, round tables, you name it, they've got it, and it's a great place to learn. Unfortunately for me this year, Christina Santiago was so involved with, you know, trying to do some things to better herself as far as getting exposure for mm-hmm. professional opportunities. I went and spent the day with her, so some of my learning didn't happen as much as trying to form contacts to help Christina be able to maybe land a job at the WNBA in the future. So there's different things that happen there.
But having a player that has that potential also has got to help you as a coach on the recruiting trail, and to say, hey, look at this player here who's been Big West Player of the Year twice.
Absolutely. I think it's brought some real credibility to our program. And, you know, Cal Poly is so well known for its academics. Athletics tends to lag behind. And so for us to win the conference championship the last two seasons and to have three straight years of the best player in the conference come from our program, it's given us some legitimacy and some recognition that we hadn't previously enjoyed.
How have you changed as a coach over the past 15 years? What are some things that you look back and say, man, I've gone from here to here to here, and I've kind of changed a lot? Or have you kind of stayed, have there been some overarching principles that you've kept?
Well, the hard work is always a piece of the puzzle that I think has been in place from day one of my coaching. I am not the most talented, I'm not the smartest, but I will probably outwork you. And those are the kind of players that I am attracted to and the program attracts. People that are totally about team and giving, I think that's what we hang our hats on, is a family kind of atmosphere, and everybody pulls their own weight. We've been fortunate to have a great player like Christina Santiago, but for the most part, if you look in the past, we pretty much had a whole bunch of players that averaged 12 points, 13 points a game, and never really had that standout player that was, you know, 22, 25 points a game like Christina has. And we've been able to continually be successful because we have a attitude of gratitude and an attitude of sharing. And I think that has been a hallmark of what I've been able to bring. How I've changed in the past, I think that, you know, I did so much and controlled so much that in the past few years, especially with this staff, I just have so much trust in their abilities that I give more away. And the more I give away, the better we get. So it tells me that I'm not so smart.
Did you feel like 2 years ago when Christina got hurt at the beginning of the year and Rachel was the player of the year in the conference, did you feel like that was maybe like as far as things lining up, that if Christina kind of, are you a if kind of person where you kind of sometimes the mind wanders? I know for me sometimes I'll say, oh, if this would have been the case, then this might have happened. Do you let yourself go there as far as thinking about both of those players maybe as seniors at the same time and maybe missing an opportunity there just due to kind of everybody being not healthy at the same time?
No, but you do bring up an interesting question, because I have had players in the past. Stephanie Brown Trafton,
right.
6'5", incredible athlete, obviously an Olympian.
She was a great medalist.
Right. She was a great basketball player as well. I lost her and a player that I thought could have represented Canada on their Olympic team. Both of them, 6'5", 6'2", and tremendous. They were really young, but that team, in my opinion, was one of the teams that, had they stayed healthy, had they stayed all the way through, that they could have gone on to the NCAAs. So there are sometimes injuries that happen that you go, oh my gosh, what if? In Christina's case, when she got injured and Rachel stepped up, it was probably the most inspiring thing I've ever seen as a coach from a team. Because talent-wise, we didn't have the talent that obviously we would have had if we had had Christina Santiago. But how Rachel Clancy went from honorable mention all-conference to the best player in the conference held us together with her great attitude, her abilities, obviously. But she just went into a different realm as far as her leadership. If she had to compete and share the limelight with Christina, I think that she would have deferred.
And she, I don't she think might that not she, have ever.
I don't of, think that she ever would have achieved what she could have achieved, because she's that kind of a person and player. So it was, I'm not going to say a blessing, but in some ways it was a blessing for both people and for our program. Number one, it told our team that we could be successful without having a star player
sure.
like Santiago on the court.
Sure.
So we've been trying to break through. Previous to that, we've been trying to break through to a championship.
Right.
We've been right there, second place, third place, and right in the mix. But all those close games, we were losing by 1 point instead of winning by 1 point.
Sure.
Something happened in that evolution to push us over the top and to take Rachel Clancy to bring our team to a different sure. level. Once we achieved that, with the addition of Christina Santiago the next year, even with the exit of Clancy, the team believed from the get-go. They were like, we're winning this thing.
Is that something that you're hoping can kind of continue momentum-wise, that can build momentum, over program momentum over time?
I sure hope so. I think that we have the talent to be back in the top bit of the conference. Whether we win a conference championship or not, I'm not sure, but I think we have the potential to do that. I think we have the talent to do that. I think we have the depth to do that. Do we have the belief? I think that that's a big part of it. And to me, what we've done the last 2 years has put us in a position that we are no longer wondering if we can. We are now believing that we can.
Great. What's one like hobby or interest of yours that most people don't know about?
Oh, I love to read. Uh-huh. Oh, I am voracious. I have a room full of books. I have a Kindle full of books. Any chance I get, even when I'm working out, I'm reading. And I learn so much, and I try to share so much with my team, with organizations that I get the pleasure to speak with about things that I'm learning. And people have been gracious enough to open their doors to that opportunity to learn from people I'm learning from.
What types of books do you like to read? Just like all kinds, or fiction, nonfiction?
Everything. Motivational is really where I get off on. I'm currently reading the book John Maxwell wrote about failing forward, and it's really quite interesting. He says we spend so much time learning how to succeed, but so often we spend so much time failing, and we don't really know how to fail well. Well, that's not the case for me, because my first part of my career, it was fail, 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 fail. But, you know, unless you fail, you never learn how to win.
Sure.
And in some ways, as I've looked at some of the, especially like professional players that were great players. You think of somebody like Magic Johnson. He goes from being an incredible Hall of Famer to then trying to coach. I knew from the get-go that wasn't going to be a great formula, because you have to suffer.
Right, you have to know how.
You have to suffer through coaching, and you have to come up the right way in order to be in a position where you can learn how to, you can know everything about basketball, but you don't know everything about people and how to get them to perform to their best ability.
I think of baseball, especially when it comes to sports, as far as failing. And I mean, the old adage that the best baseball players ever fail 65-70% of the time.
This is true.
The best hitters
absolutely
in the world. And so,
you know, Owen, that was part of the little chapter that I read.
Oh, okay.
Hank Aaron was up against another rookie. Both rookies had their very first game going against each other. I forget the one fellow's name, but he went 4-for-5.
Uh-huh.
Hank Aaron went 0-for-5. If he had quit on that day,
right,
come on.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And so the failures build who we are when we choose to let it build. There's plenty of people that give up because of their failure. And then there's other people stubborn like me that just keep going and going and going.
So motivational stuff is stuff that you really enjoy. How about like any like fiction lately that you've read? Any, or do you mostly stick with kind of the nonfiction?
No, I love murder mysteries.
Uh-huh.
People wouldn't know that about me. Especially because I don't like bad things happening.
Like James Patterson?
I love James Patterson.
Okay.
Yeah, he's awesome. Really, anything that's a murder mystery, I'm in on it. I'm like, yes, get after it.
One thing I've noticed, and you talked about it earlier with the voice, and this is kind of a random question, but I noticed that you know, midway through games, you know, sometimes the voice starts to go. Do you have like a plan for that with your assistants, or do you try to like, you know, have them say something to them and have them say something, or kind of just do your best with less of a voice? I know when I'm cheering, or even when I was a volunteer assistant, sometimes the voice would start going, and then, gosh, how are you going to communicate with the players on the court?
Yeah, well, I have a really small voice anyway, so I'm like, it's double duty for me. The players are very respectful. Even when I'm in practice, my voice doesn't carry very much, so if a player's just kind of chilling and they're at half court and they can't hear, I'm like, invite them down, come hear what we're going to be talking about. You know, otherwise they'll just,
so you don't have to yell across the gym.
Yeah, right. They'll stand there and they'll kind of lean. I'm like, that's not going to cut it, come on down. So when I'm coaching, whether it's in practice or in a game, where I get my players can usually hear me. The difficulty is really with getting timeouts from the referees. And
yeah, I noticed that a few times where, you know, you're jumping up and down trying to get their attention.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do that better other than having a foghorn or a whistle in my mouth or something. But my staff will try to help identify that, the timeout request. My team will. The whole bench will be like, timeout to the ref. And I don't know if it sounds different, you know.
Yeah.
So if we have plays that we call, I try to make it sound different than timeout so that the referee can go straight timeout. So I used to have a play called five out, but then they would call timeout and I didn't want a timeout. So I'm like, I'm going to get rid of that.
That's not working.
Yeah.
That's not working. Tell me about a couple of players, what fans can expect from somebody new. I think Taryn Garza, right? She's a new transfer. She's going to be a sophomore or a junior?
She'll have 3 years remaining.
3 years of eligibility remaining. Tell me about
tremendous Taryn. Athlete. For those of the fans that have seen in the past, blast from the past, Jessica Eggleston. Similar body type, strong body, can really defend, great athlete, can jump out of the gym. She has better defensive abilities right now than offensive abilities, but she is a lockdown defender. We don't want somebody to get the ball. When she played at Pacific, she guarded Rachel Clancy, and Clancy, because Clancy's so clever, she would find ways to make Taryn foul her, but she would be exhausted by the end of the game because she was running off her off picks and doing everything she could to try to shed her. So Taryn's going to be a defensive specialist for us, and as her offensive skills grow, she'll be very significant in that area as well. But I expect her to be a great rebounder and defender for us. I expect her to be able to help us with returning to some form of full court pressure, which is something we've done somewhat in the past if we had the right personnel, and I just love to press and turn up the tempo. So she's going to be great in that. Some other key players, I think, for us, we've got an incredible athlete. Madison Allen, 6'4" from Australia, is a lefty, best defensive player I've ever seen at the post position in the league. And maybe not Brittany Griner, swat everything that comes your way, but moves so well,
right.
Easily, I think, has the potential to be the best shot blocker in Cal Poly history.
Gets herself in the right positions to get. Uh-huh.
Really tremendous. A great rebounder, great defender, works her tail off. A very willing passer. We'd like her to be a little bit more selfish.
Okay.
But she is going to be a gem, and I'd be shocked if she wasn't selected as best defensive player of the league this year.
Wow.
And I'd be shocked if she wasn't in some form of an all-conference performer. Also, I think that somebody who could really vie for a starting position for us is Taylor Spears. Taylor's dad played football here at Cal Poly, is an engineer, and actually when you go through the airport and you have to go with your hands up through that little thing there, his company actually designed that thing.
Oh.
So you can blame him.
Uh-huh.
Raphael.
I was opt out. Sorry.
But his daughter is a heck of a player. Uh-huh. She played at Brea Olinda, which is a very fine program.
Sure.
And we got her away from Arizona. So,
wow.
Very, very talented. Somebody that we expect great things from.
Sure, sure. A couple more questions. One, for people who have seen the team so far, which of the returning players are they going to be able to see and maybe say, wow, that player's made a big jump between last year and this year, or what are you hoping? I mean, you haven't been able to see your team a lot during the offseason here, but which player or players are you hoping that you see kind of a big tangible jump from, or that fans can maybe see that from last year or this year?
Well, I think probably the biggest one, literally, is Molly Schlemmer.
Molly,
I'm sure people were surprised with what she was doing during the season last year, and she's taken it to a whole nother level. Her ability to finish is excellent. Left or right, she's a big presence.
Under the hoop, yeah.
Under the hoop. I mean, if we can get her healthy again, we might be looking at a fourth-time Big West Player of the Year. She has that kind of potential if things go well for her. So I think that she's got tremendous upside and tremendous potential. Hopefully she can recover from this mono, and
sure.
She's probably the biggest surprise to me as far as her play goes. Ariana Elgato is playing some great basketball.
Yeah,
well.
Got a lot of minutes last year, kind of as the backup point guard, right?
Yeah, and, you know, with Jonae in question about when her return will be.
Sure.
She'll have a large responsibility on her shoulders.
Sure.
And, I think that she's ready to take on that leadership role.
Last question. What's it going to take for the program to break through in the Big West tournament? I know you guys have been the regular season champs and kind of been disappointed in the tournament the last couple of years. Maybe disappointed. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth. But talk to me about what will it take for this program to kind of break through in the tournament and to win the tournament title?
Well, in all honesty, the year that Rachel Clancy was a senior, that team overachieved. The Davis team was a superior team to ours, and they deserved to go to the NCAA tournament. I was just astounded at how well we did and performed during the regular season to take out the regular season championship. Last year was different. Last year was heartbreaking, disappointing, because we had the best team by far. And we hit a poor game for everybody, and obviously losing Jonae 3 minutes into the game, I think, disrupted us a little bit. But I also give credit to Long Beach State, because what they were doing on the court really disrupted us as well. So they had a great game plan, but we sure didn't respond the way that we had hoped to. I think for us to move beyond is to have no fear of failure and to just go for it, to be honest, because being able to handle whatever people throw at us, I have to do a great job of preparing the team for all kinds of situations that
all
could
the contingencies,
happen,
yeah.
Including if we lose starting players. I have to prepare the team for that. And, if I'll do my job of preparing them, then they won't be surprised. They won't feel like, oh, this is what's going on. Why am I disjointed? So I need to do a better job of preparing the team for those contingencies of injuries, foul trouble, coach gets thrown out of the game. Hopefully that doesn't ever happen. Anything that could happen.
Yeah.
You know.
It's interesting you're talking about the failure piece earlier, kind of welcoming it or being not being afraid of it. And then you mentioned it again as kind of one of the keys to breaking through this year. Is that something that might be kind of a theme as far as how you talk to your team about preparing and everything this year?
Absolutely. I think that we can't be frightened of failure at all. In fact, as we open up this season, probably without Jonae, we have Oklahoma State. Then on that same road trip, we go to Oregon State. Then we come home and we play San Diego. And then we go on the road and play Cal. That's a pretty tall task for our team. That's going to be learning and discovering what new roles they have to play this year. So there'll be some failure. There may be a lot of failure early on, but how are we going to respond to that? How are we going to strengthen our resolve? How are we going to be a better unit? How are we going to learn to play better together? Those are all questions that remain to be answered, but it's certainly going to be a mission of ours. Is we don't care what comes our way. We're just going to keep battling, and we're going to keep getting better.
Great. A couple key dates. Practice for you guys has already started, or does it start pretty soon?
We get our first opportunity on September 15th.
Okay.
And then our first real practice is October 2nd.
Okay.
First game, we're on the road at Oklahoma State.
Out in Stillwater.
Yeah, and you may remember that last year they had suffered a devastating tragedy in
was that
the program.
That was their head coach.
Their men's coach. Mm-hmm. The head coach for the women's program, both Kurt and his assistant, were killed in a plane crash. And just a terrible tragedy, but we're going out there to play that very fine program.
Great. And first home game? Do you know the date?
San Diego. And they cleaned our clocks last year, I believe.
USD.
USD.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Same team the football team's playing this Saturday. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Same school. Yeah.
I think it's the 18th of November. But
I'll put
you
it on there after.
Me.
Yeah, I'll check on it for you.
Okay.
Coach Mimna, I really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.